It's Suns Day, brought to you by Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer. Previewing tonight's Western Conference matchup versus the team with the best record in the NBA, the Utah Jazz, which tips off tonight at 7 on the home of Phoenix Suns basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Day with Burns and Gambo.
Luke filling in for Gambo today. It's the 7 o'clock tip time tonight between the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns from Phoenix Suns Arena, part of a back-to-back stretch where tomorrow night Suns are in L.A. taking on the Clippers. Both of these games are nationally televised. Tonight's game is on ESPN. Tomorrow is on TNT. With a win tonight, the Phoenix Suns would close to within a game and a half of the Utah Jazz for the best record, not only in the Western Conference, but in the NBA. They'd only be a game back in the loss column with a win tonight. And just as we spoke earlier in the show about this being the biggest game for the Phoenix Suns since .. it's kind of a similar and yet different conversation, because I think this one is less of a debate. This is the biggest regular season, well, by default, the biggest game that Devin Booker has ever played in his NBA career, is it not?
Oh,
it has
yeah.
to be.
Yeah. I mean, because the only game we could really come up with before for the team, we're going back to when Jeff Hornacek was the coach. Devin Booker wasn't on the team. So, like you said earlier, the only one you can really put in, even in competition with this, I guess it would be the first meeting with the Lakers this year. I don't think that's the answer. Or, like you said, the bubble, the last game of the bubble last year, because you're trying to go 8-0. But, I mean, what I think, if there was another option on our poll question, what I really like about this is we are now, we're stepping out of the era where we have to manufacture things that we're excited about with the Suns. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to be like, oh, well, hey, you know, if they win tonight, that's 25 wins. Or, oh, hey, if they win tonight, you know, that's a better record than last year. It's like, no, they might win the championship this year. It's very extreme what we've gone from 10 years of like, well, it's better than last year, and we want all of our players to get good together at the same time when the Warriors aren't good, and timeline and hashtag and all this. Now it's like, oh, actually, they might just be the best team in the league.
It's been impossibly quick. I mean, I think we all just assumed it was going to be a process to get to this point. You start off and you're in the play-in tournament, and then the next year you're the sixth seed, and then the next year you're the third seed, and then, you know, that it was going to be some sort of a progress. I don't think anybody thought you'd go from, hey, we're happy to win, we're 30 wins in an 82-game season is a goal.
Yeah.
From that to, let's try to be the team with the best record overall in the NBA going into the postseason in the span of a year. I mean, one calendar year basically is what we've changed our goals with on this one. And for a guy like Devin Booker, you know, we all know the stories. This is what he's always wanted. This is what he's always dreamed of. This is what he's always worked towards. This is what he's always talked about wanting to do here. I mean, through all of our paranoid delusions about, is he going to leave and is he going to want to go somewhere else? And believe me, there's still a segment of the Suns fan base who believes one of these days that might rear, but nobody talks about that anymore. From all of that to this, the biggest game of Devin Booker's career, for it to happen as quickly as it had, sometimes I still have a hard time wrapping my mind around how fast it all happened.
Well, I mean, I have no concept of time anymore, and the fact that we're calling today Suns Day and it's a Wednesday is going to throw me off this weekend. I mean,
what happens when it gets to Sunday?
Yeah,
are you going to think it's like Tuesday afternoon or something?
Yes, yeah. It's going to be I already was thrown off. But, you know, the last game in the bubble for the Suns was August 13th, and I've heard you guys talk about this before. You know, you went into the bubble last year and you're like, man, I hope they can find a way to go 7-1 or 8-0, and then everything breaks their way and get there and you play the Lakers in the first round and probably get swept. Maybe you steal one or whatever. And now it's like, I don't want the Lakers in the first round, but I'll bring them on in the second round. Let's see what happens. It hasn't even been 8 months.
I know. It's just not supposed to happen.
No.
This fast. You know, it's not. So it's we're still all kind of getting used to it. And then with the Jazz tonight, his name escapes me, the play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. He was on Bickley and Murata's show earlier today, and he was kind of describing the state of the Utah Jazz. And man, it really is like a mirror image of the Phoenix Suns in many, many ways. Small to medium market, at least. You know, Phoenix is a big city, but it's not considered a big NBA market like Philly or Boston or LA or New York or anything like that. They both kind of found themselves in the bubble to a certain extent. The Suns, because they went 8-0. The Jazz, because Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert were able to get over what happened with COVID and all of that stuff.
They forgot about that for a second.
They're both top 10 teams offensively and defensively. They both kind of play similar styles of basketball. They're both led by a star who one of these days we assume will be an even bigger star than they are now. And there is a constant debate among these two fan bases over who is actually the better player, Devin Booker or Donovan Mitchell. I mean, in many ways, you know, they both have a big man who can alter the outcome of games. Well, Rudy Gobert is obviously more consistent at it than DeAndre Ayton is, but they both are built around two stars. For the Jazz, it's Gobert and Mitchell. For the Suns, it's Paul and Booker. They're very similar teams. And I think at the core of it is this belief that come playoff time, oh, it's going to be about the Lakers, and it's going to be about the Clippers. And the Jazz and the Suns, not exposed, but they will be revealed as not true contenders when they have to go up against one of those LA teams in a best of seven series. I think they're dealing with that in Utah just like the Suns are dealing with that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you know, I would even go one step further of like, yeah, right now it's definitely Devin Booker and Chris Paul's team. But if you're looking at big picture, I mean, you could make a case it's Donovan Mitchell and a big man, it's Devin Booker and a big man with DeAndre Ayton, at least the way they're building. I think there's really something to that notion of you have two teams that are on the top of the league. These are the top two teams in the league. Devin Booker, we know how good he's been. Donovan Mitchell has basically been the same guy in Utah for the longest time. Similar, not the exact same games, but I mean, very, very good player. Hasn't played quite as long. But the problem with that debate has always been Donovan Mitchell has a team around him. Devin Booker doesn't, you know?
Right.
And now it's like, yeah, okay, what can Devin Booker do with Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris and Donovan Mitchell gets Rudy Gobert? Like, that's not fair. Well, now, here we go. And I know they've already met once this season. But Donovan Mitchell, if you look at the start of the season, he couldn't hit a shot. And they asked him about it, and he was like, yeah, this is completely my fault. And he used words I can't use on the radio. And then at some point, and I'd have to go back and look, he just flipped the switch, and it's probably when Utah stopped losing games entirely, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, you have two guys that are more than capable of taking over a game. Like, you remember Donovan Mitchell against Jamal Murray in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I feel like a series between Suns and Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be Mitchell and Booker, back and forth, back and forth. That would be great.
That'd be great.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. And it would, I don't know if it would settle the debate between the two fan bases, a debate which is largely being waged on social media and Twitter.
Argue on Twitter?
You know what? It's odd that you would think, a social media platform like that, it'd be all peace and love and joy and rainbows and daffodils. And it's oddly not.
It's not.
Yeah,
right.
I know. They probably need to rethink the matrix on that one and figure out a better way to get that to work somehow. They're all yelling at each other. Not that a 7-game series between the two would settle that argument. But, tonight, you watch on social media, man, the Jazz and the Suns fans are going to be going at it all night long about
it's great, though.
Who's it's at the end of the day, this is what Devin Booker has wanted his entire basketball career. And it's all right in front. And I can't think of, I knock on wood when I say this, he's playing about as good as you could possibly expect over his last three games going into this game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been money.
Yeah.
These last three games. Competition hasn't been the best, but he's been money going into these last
three games. It speaks to the bigger picture of all this stuff matters now. Usually in April, there's not anything to talk about with the Suns other than draft status. But now it's like, you're right. Suns fans and Jazz fans are going to be arguing all night, no matter who wins this game, over Booker and Mitchell. And it, like, matters now because it's going to come back up in a couple weeks, and it's probably going to come back up in a couple months.
Yep. It is Suns Day. The two best teams in the NBA meet tonight. Suns taking on the Utah Jazz in a Western Conference showdown. Tip-off is at 7 on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Suns Day is brought to you by Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show with Luke Lipinski filling in, for the first time in over a decade, U of A basketball needs a new head coach. With all things considered, how desirable is that job? That's coming up here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. So before we engage in this conversation about how good the U of A job, men's basketball job, is now that it's open, just want to make sure I put everything out in the open here on the Burns and Gambo show, okay?
Starting at our 12 o'clock position and working our way clockwise, Sarah Cazell is a noted University of Arizona alumni. Okay. And over here at 3 o'clock, got Luke Lipinski filling in for Gambo.
Yeah.
He is a noted University of Arizona hater.
I would not go that far.
Okay.
I went to ASU.
Okay. ASU alum. Like Vince Murata, I was actually shocked the other day when Vince Murata expressed his intention to root for the U of A women to lose in the Final Four and the championship game. Which,
can you believe?
Why, when he would say something like that, you would ever pretend to be friends with those guys when you're on the air with them, Sarah, is beyond me. I mean, that's about as insulting as they get.
Well, at this point, who is my friend at the station? Just you?
Me.
Only you.
Who else do you
Jordan's
need?
Jordan's nice to me. Oh, that's true. Just you and peanut butter.
Who else do you need?
It's the NAU people.
Turns on you.
We're
too.
The salt of the earth.
Oh, my gosh. And that's a good
Bernsie,
point.
Bernsie, myself, Monica Lindstrom.
Yep. As I'm working great. My way around the clock here. Okay, so we got ASU guy over here in Luke. Me, I went to all three. Okay, so when it comes to who I root for, I'm a total mercenary. I don't care. I mean, I'll just root for whomever I want whenever I want. So I feel like I'm actually like the best person to have this conversation about.
That's
and then there's Jordan, who's this total NAU pacifist who just loves everybody. And
we're a cross-country school. We don't worry about men's basketball.
Maybe ASU's a cross-country school, too. I mean, I should look into that.
So that's the context
triathlons.
Now. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. See, there you go.
That's the context for this conversation we're about to have about how good this job is now that it's available. Sean Miller's out. U of A is available. I'll start the conversation with this and just see where it goes.
Okay.
When they hired Sean Miller, given the internal strife they were going through as a school then, I was shocked they were able to pull that rabbit out of that hat. I mean, it really was, because that was Lute, and that was Russ Pennell, and that was Tim Floyd, and that was
Kevin O'Neill.
I mean, that was messy. And they came out of that with Sean Miller, and I thought, wow, I mean, Sean Miller's good, really good, like up and coming, really. Can they do that again? Are we underselling the U of A job because the last time they were in a position like this, they were able to, or were they close enough to their glory days that they were able to sell Sean Miller on their glory days, and now that they're too far removed from that, it's a much more difficult trick? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should still be a very respected program. I guess the other factor is like how much damage has the last couple years done? Not in the sense that it's like permanent damage, but
right.
You're not hiring a coach 2 years from now. If you're hiring a coach right now, does that make this job a little less desirable than it typically is if you get into like a bidding war for a coach? I definitely think, I mean, if they're smart about this, they absolutely can go out there and get a very good coach who I would assume they're going to go the path of this guy's on the rise and we're going to try and not catch lightning in a bottle, but like find the next great coach. And I think they can do that for sure. I just where you lose me, not you specifically, but this goes back to where I will start to sound like a U of A hater. I have some friends that are U of A fans that are like they're realistic about their team. Jarrett, I don't know if I consider him a friend, but you know he's the opposite end of the spectrum. He thinks his team's going 0-30 every year. Sarah, who I just last week realized her nickname was Sarazona for a long time. She just told me that last week. That's when I realized like the U of A thing was real with her.
It's true.
There's also a subset of U of A fans though.
Sarazona?
Somebody gave that to me at college. In
okay.
College.
At college?
I went at college. I'm just trying to bring some Gambo to the show today since we miss him so much.
Hey, you know what? You own that. That's all you. I'm sorry, Luke. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
I was fixated on Sarazona.
Just as long as you're not putting U of A in that truly elite group. Because if you're doing that, like, okay, so I grew up in Seattle. U of A is not nearly as big of a deal nationally as they are locally. Like people here, there's a subset of U of A fans that are like, yeah, I mean, there's Duke, there's North Carolina, there's Kentucky, there's U of A. We won a national championship. It's like, all right, Holy Cross has won a national championship. It can't just be that. You know what I mean? And that's why I think the Sean Miller, I think moving on from him is so important, because if you're U of A, are you either basing your status on what you've accomplished in the past? Because now that's starting to get a ways away if you're just going purely by national championship wins. Or are you basing it on what you're doing currently, which is still very good, but Sean Miller was starting to ruin that.
I think if I were U of A and I were trying to sell this job, and if I were going to swing big for, you know, I know Mark Few's name has been mentioned. I know Scott Drew. This is Jeff Goodman from the Field of 68 podcast, and he mentions the Baylor coach, given his brother is at GCU.
His father and brother are 2 hours down the road in Phoenix right now.
I got you.
Okay. So yeah. How about they go first after Scott Drew? I don't think he'd do it. How do you do it after winning a title at Baylor? I think he's at Baylor for the long haul. But to me, if there's a swing, why not swing for Scott Drew? Again, Bryce Drew at Grand Canyon University down the road. Homer Drew living in Phoenix with his wife and Scott's mother.
Okay, I wouldn't have a problem with them swinging for Scott Drew or Mark Few if they wanted to. Because here's
that
where
all
I,
rhymed.
Huh? I know, right?
Scott Drew or Mark Few if they wanted to. Sorry, that totally derailed by your.
I'm accidentally lyrical. It's when I'm not here, I go home and I write rap lyrics.
I was gonna say, yeah, I unintentional rapping.
People don't know, but it's kind of my side gig when I'm not hosting shows here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. What I was gonna say was, okay, are they a long time removed from their national championship? Yes. Are they a long time removed from the peak of the Lute Olson era? Yes, that was a long time ago. It wasn't that long ago, though, when they were in the conversation to be a national champion.
True. Very true.
I mean, that was just a half decade ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't – so that's still – in terms of the memory banks, that's still very – so I think they can at least ask for big names. They can at least try – I don't think they'll connect on big names, but I don't think it's – unrealistic or out of the totally absurd for them to want to try to get a big name, because it wasn't that long ago where they were one close loss to Wisconsin away from being a Final Four team, and they were right there. And I think people still remember that about U of A, in addition to the fact that they used to be one of the true blue bloods of the sport. So I think they can swing big if they want. I just don't know if they're going to connect.
And again, that goes back to I think this is why they had to move forward and do something, because like as a recruit, if you're looking at a school and you're saying, okay, I'm looking at the Pac-12 and I'm looking at like who's the most historically great. Well, UCLA has 11 titles. I mean, if we're just going like all time. So then are you going currently? If you're just going like who has the best team right now, who's the best program in 2022, let's say, looking forward. I mean, is it Oregon? Is it? It's not U of A right now, but they're on both of those lists, and they were starting to go backwards.
Yeah. It's the biggest game so far of the season, besides obviously winning. What is James Jones hoping to see out of his team tonight against the Jazz? We'll ask the Suns GM. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show with Luke filling in.
Burns and Gambo, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. This is the Suns Front Office Show, presented by First Bank. First Bank is proud to be the official bank of the Phoenix Suns. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
Fun, fun day around here today and tomorrow for us. We get to talk about the Phoenix Suns and their game against the Utah Jazz and then the LA Clippers. Back-to-back days, games, I should say, against back-to-back teams that are among the best in the Western Conference, all on national TV. And, of course, the Suns are right there with them, wedged in between the two of them. We're really looking forward to the next 48 hours or so. James Jones, the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, he joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line for his weekly segment. How fun are these next 2 days going to be for you, or are they just more games on the schedule that you got to play? How do you view these next 2 days, James?
I mean, they're just games we have to play. We play two really good teams over the next couple of days, but tonight we have Utah. That's where our focus is. Utah's a really good team. They've been playing some really good basketball in a lot of ways. They do a lot of the things that we do when we want to do, which is, you know, share the ball, defend really well in the half court, and in transition, and play team ball all the way through. So, two really good teams tonight, and it should be fun for everyone involved and everyone watching at home.
James, that mentality that these are just games. I mean, you were in the league as a player not that long ago. Was that your mentality when you played too?
Yeah, you have to. You know, it's one of 82, and you want to have fun tonight. You know, we're on national TV, a place where every player aspires to be, and you're playing a really good team. So at home against a good team, it's fun, and you want to lay it all on the line tonight, but you don't want to make too much of it, because in an ideal world, This is just a build up to something that happens in the postseason.
Is it easy to do that as a player, to kind of talk yourself down from getting overhyped about a matchup, or is it not as hard as we might make it out to be in the media?
No, I don't think it's talking yourself down. I think you just don't talk yourself up. You don't overhype it. You don't make it more than what you practice and what you've done. At the end of the day, it's a routine. It's a game. You know, the things that we're doing in practice should prepare us for the game. And outside of, you know, our crowd, you know, like really being into it tonight, we expect the team across from us to bring it. And so if they bring it and we bring it at the end of the night, when it's all said and done, you want to be exhausted. You want to smile and say we got a victory against a very good team.
James, from your experience playing in this league and playing in big games, I mean, like one of the most fulfilling things I think for Suns fans right now is we're finally going to get to see Devin Booker in the playoffs. And we all think like that he's just built for that. But I mean, you know, from what you've seen from Devin Booker and what you've seen from other big game players, do you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, what you do in the playoffs typically is a result of the things you do in the regular season. And we've seen Devin come up big time and time again. In the regular season, I mean, you can just look to the Houston game. Had a tremendous stretch when we were struggling to put us back over the top and seal that game. So if I had to forecast and project how he'll perform, I think he'll perform like he always does in big games. He'll embrace it, enjoy it, make it fun to watch, and build on what he's already done so far.
James Jones, general manager of the Suns. He's our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. Suns and the Jazz, 7 o'clock tonight. National TV audience. Of course, you'll hear it right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I don't want to suggest for a second that Devin Booker had anything to prove or had anything to redeem himself for, but from a confidence standpoint, was it good to see him play late in the game the way he did against Houston? Because the last time we had you on, I think we asked you a few questions about his fourth quarter struggles a little bit. Was that a confidence builder? Has it been a confidence builder for him the way he's played late in these games the last few games?
It is. It's reassuring to him and to everyone, all the players and everyone involved. Like, we know we need him to be big in these moments, and he's proving it to himself and to everyone else. But once again, this is what we expect to happen for him to see challenges, kind of figure them out and then overcome them. So it's been good for him, but we're going to need him to do what he's done recently consistently, because it only gets tougher from here.
James, you guys, you have won, it's not even really a losing streak, three games. You haven't lost two in a row since late January. And I talked to Cameron Payne a couple weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, that was kind of something, you know, we put in our mind. We don't want to ever lose more than one in a row. And it's great to have that thought, but it's really hard to do it. I mean, what is it about this group that if they lose a game, they respond with like six wins?
I mean, they're resilient. When I say every guy on this team, you know, takes the team's goals to heart. You know, you talk about doing whatever you can do to help the team win, and you do everything in your power to prevent us from losing two in a row. And, you know, the guys have taken these opportunities and they've made the most of them. It's not, I always say there's no secret sauce. There's nothing special, a special approach or recipe to our success. It's just that when our guys collectively decide to do something, and everyone's bought in, we typically have success.
We've talked about this a few times over the last couple of weeks, and the quality of play against the competition. Obviously, that goes to a different level. For the most part, have you been pleased with how your team has played despite some, at times, choppy moments against some of the lesser than best teams in the NBA?
I have, because you know, I've seen it too many times where you want perfect, and Monty talks about it a lot, you know. You want to be pretty. You want it to be perfect. But within that, you have to look for the areas of progress. And no two games are alike. And, you know, we've struggled against – and I hate using that term, below 500 teams, because if you lose to a team early in the season and they're below 500, but they turn it around at the end of the season, at the point in time at which you lost to them, they were below 500. But they're typically the same team with the same players. They just have better chemistry. So we've struggled with – teams that play a different style. You know, those teams that are below 500 teams, they just come out hard, aggressive, maybe not as talented, not as skilled, maybe not as refined, and they just tax you physically. And so those teams we've struggled with, but, you know, we've been able to bounce back. We've been able to put together some good stretches, and our units have had success against those teams. Some games it's the starters, some games it's the backups, but as a collective, I think we've started to make some progress playing those teams that play that kind of desperation style of basketball.
It's been such a jumbled season, and I mean, so sometimes you're going to catch a team that's really good, but they're missing LeBron or something, they're missing Anthony Davis. I mean, how important is it to you that, you know, you have a game like this tonight, you're going to have more down the stretch where you're getting really good teams at full strength? Is there still learning experiences this group can go through before the playoffs start?
Of course. You know, they can be at full strength. We can be at full strength. Our full strength a month from now will look different. Theirs as well. So we want competition. Our guys don't shy away from it. We want to be able to gauge the other team's best punch and see if we can throw one too. So it's going to be good for us to continue to get healthy, stay healthy, and play teams when they're at their best.
We've been talking about, and James Jones, general manager of the Suns, our guest here, his weekly visit, 3:30 every Wednesday here on the flagship home of the Suns, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We've been talking about the Lakers and how kind of the presumption is that when the Lakers get everybody back, that it doesn't matter whether they're the 6th seed or the 5th seed or the 7th seed or the 8th seed, that the Lakers come playoff team are still a team to fear and a team to respect because of everything that they bring to the table. From your perspective and your team, does it matter being the 1 seed, the 2 seed, the 3 seed? Is there, I mean, there's obviously somewhat of a home court advantage depending on how far you get, but in terms of where you guys are, because tonight's game could be very important to that, does it matter that much to you, or are you more concerned about how you're playing when the playoffs begin?
I mean, it matters. It matters. I can't say one matters more than the other, but if you could have home court advantage throughout the course of the playoffs, that's what you take. You always want to play in front of your crowd, and you want to be in your environment. You don't want to be on the road, you know, in hotels for 4 days straight if you can be at home for most of the time. We definitely want to have the best seed possible, but you have to be healthy. You have to play the right way and have a good rhythm going into the playoffs, because home court advantage with no rhythm isn't really an advantage. So you have to balance them all. We want them all. You know, we're greedy. We want a great seeding. You want to be at home. You want to play well heading into the playoffs. You want to be healthy because you just want to optimize your chances for success once you get there. Like picking opponents, who do you play? When do you play them? That's out of our control. The only thing we can control is how well we're playing and, you know, just worry about us.
James, this team is 35-14. I mean, there were years there where they really struggled. And in fairness to you, you weren't here for that. But you've been so decisive all season. And even at the trade deadline, you're like, no, I built this team for the season before the season. I want to see what it can do. Has anything surprised you this year?
Just the way our guys have responded to the challenges of the schedule. You know, all of the testing, the condensed games, you know, the cancellations and rescheduling. It takes a tremendous toll physically, emotionally. But our guys have responded well. There are plenty of opportunities for us to struggle and kind of pack it in and go on a slide. But when we face adversity, this group sticks up. You know, they stand up and they respond. So I've been extremely pleased with the way we responded to the challenges, and I expect us to do the same going forward.
James, best of luck tonight and with the games upcoming this week. We look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks for coming on for a few.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, James.
James Jones joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. It is Suns Day. The two best teams in the NBA meeting tonight. Suns taking on the Utah Jazz in a Western Conference showdown that I would assume by now you know plenty about. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock right here, 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Suns Day is brought to you by Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, with Luke filling in, it was a wild win. Many were cursing baseball's new extra innings rule last night. But could that win in Colorado help change the direction of the team early the season? Plus, news from the Diamondbacks about their rotation that you're going to want to hear next here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Cattell swings and rips a base hit into the gap in left center field. In his vote, Peacock goes to third base. They're going to wave him home. Here comes the throw in. It will not be made. Peacock scores from first. It's a two-run double by Marte, and the Diamondbacks now lead it 10-7.
They would go on to win 10-8 last night. Luke is filling in for Gambo here on the Burns and Gambo Show. It was, I think they mentioned it during the broadcast, and I trust Steve Berthume and Bob Brenly and their research staff that they have there. I have no reason to believe that this is inaccurate. of all of the extra inning games that were played last year in the debut of this kind of rule, only two of them went to 13 innings, okay? And I don't know how many 13-inning games we've had so far this year. I can't imagine we've had hardly any at all. But it does sort of speak to the rarity of what last night was. I mean, this extra inning rule was supposed to prevent things like last night from happening, and yet last night happened. It just kept going and going and going. And in full disclosure, and I don't mind admitting this on the air, I totally fell asleep in the 12th inning of that game. Just conked right out. At least was aware enough to hit record on the remote control and add like 3 hours to it just in case.
Just in case it went 18.
Just in case that we were doing the runner on second rule through the 18th inning, as you never know. And then I watched the rest of it this morning because I got the alert on my phone in the middle of the night that they had won. And I got to go see how they did it. I totally fell asleep. I don't know how you feel about the rule. I really like it. I don't think last night is a great example of it at its finest moment, but I still like the extra inning rule very much.
I think overall I do, but you're right. I mean, last night is the exact opposite. If you were trying to pitch this rule to Major League Baseball, you would never show this game because I don't know when it dawned on me. At some point, probably, let's say the 12th inning.
Okay.
When Colorado scored again, it dawned on me like, wait a minute, this rule is making this game go longer. Because everybody's scoring every inning.
I hadn't really thought of it that way, but then now that you think about it, it kind of had almost that college football overtime feel to it, where touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, touchdown. Okay, we're going to make them go for 2 points now. Fine, 2-point conversion. We'll convert it. They'll convert it. It's like one of those 5 overtime games where you're like, just for the love of God, will somebody please end this national nightmare so I can go to sleep, please?
Right. I mean, some of it was like, okay, there's a nice hit right there. Okay, that's that scores a run. It was going to score a run anyway. And then it was like, there's just one of the bats was like, there's a grounder up the middle. That'll score a run to start the inning. And I'm like, we're never going to be done here.
Well, we talked with Matt Peacock about this earlier. So the Diamondbacks take a 7-6 lead in the 12th. And if I remember right, that was the Cabrera double,
yes.
I think, right? The Cabrera double. Okay, so they take the 7-6 lead. Here comes Matt Peacock, second inning of work. The runner on second starts out there. He did not give – he recorded 3 consecutive outs, Matt Peacock did.
Yep.
3 straight outs. I mean
– And a run scored.
And so I'm like, what else are you supposed to do, right? I mean, you got – I don't even remember what order. I think it was a ground ball, fly ball, ground ball. And the ground ball, the whole...
You're right. You're spot on right here. I'm looking at it.
Get him on, get him over, get him in. Well, the problem with the extra inning rule is that the get him on part has already been done for you.
The hard part,
right? Now I just need to get him over and get him in. I mean, that equation becomes a lot easier when you solve the get him on part, and it does get a little tedious. I liked the strategy. I still do. I like watching how different managers employ different strategies given in. But last night got a little tedious. I mean, because to your point, it was just the only reason that game went on as long as it did was because of the extra inning rule.
You crystallized it, right? That definitely was the inning. Because the top half of that inning, they get the infield single from David Peralta, and then Cabrera doubles in a run. You're like, okay. Like, the Diamondbacks scored a legitimate run. And then the Rockies come. I mean, in theory, if you have a guy starting at second base with no outs, shouldn't your strategy just be fly ball, we score a run? Like, you just need to get the ball in the air to deep into the outfield your
all
first
you
two
need
hitters.
To do. Yep. That's it. That's all you need to do. I still like the rule. I don't know if I like it in the 10th inning, and I mentioned that on social media last night or this morning. I can't remember. I don't know. I think I would still play one inning under normal circumstances, and then maybe in the 11th roll it out there so you try to avoid those 15, 16-inning nightmares. But I think last night was the rarity. I think for the most part, I think it's a good rule. And I actually hope it sticks. I'm not much of a purist when it comes to that. I hope this rule stays around for a little bit longer.
Do you need this rule in Coors Field? That was the other thing that kept coming up last night.
It does.
Maybe we just play all extra inning games in Coors Field.
It does seem a little excessive. I promised news about the rotation, and then we'll talk about what last night's win meant for a team that was seemingly hanging on by a thread going into that finale against San Diego on Sunday. Troy Lovello just announced moments ago that Caleb Smith is moving to the bullpen.
Okay.
No replacement for the rotation named yet. I will tell you that the very great Nick Bocoro of AZ Central just tweeted out about 10 minutes ago, Zach Gallen is scheduled to throw 80 pitches tonight at the alternate site. That would rule him out to take Caleb's spot on Friday for the home opener for the Diamondbacks. I mean, we're talking about we don't know who's going to be starting the Diamondbacks home opener on Friday when they take on the Reds. That would have been Caleb Smith's spot. It's not going to be Caleb Smith. Torrey didn't say who it was going to be, but if Zach Gallen on a Wednesday is throwing 80 pitches in an alternate site game, he's not throwing on Friday, so you can rule him out. So who will it be?
Well, I mean, you could, in theory, because you had the day off Monday.
Could you start?
You could just move Widener up. I don't know if they'd want to do that.
Because Widener pitched on Sunday. So
Sunday
Monday
to Friday.
Yeah, so it'd be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday pitch. Yeah.
So, I mean, you could. You could just go with four guys.
Yeah, you could use the off day to your advantage and just shrink it and buy yourself another trip through the rotation before Zach Gallen is ready to go.
Well, and
that might be it.
They have an off day on the 14th, too. So, in theory, you have Widener pitch, and then you just go through the rotation again, and then you have another off day.
Yeah. They must have really liked what Taylor Widener did in his one outing to make this decision.
Or really not liked what Caleb Smith did.
Or really not liked what Caleb's, or some combination of the two. Do you believe in baseball and setting a tone? And did last night's game set any kind of tone for this team after their awful start to the season?
I think 162 games, there's going to be ups and downs for every team unless you're truly awful or truly great, right? And we talked to Matt Peacock earlier in the show. That even the interview was fun. Like, there was just a fun vibe, and he said there was a fun vibe after the game last night. And, you know, it's one win in the standings, you're 2-3. But with the way this weekend started, and you were 0-3 after Saturday night, and you had just lost 7-0, and it's like, yeah, you're playing San Diego to start the season, but you better win one of these games because this is not the Dodgers, you know. And if you want to have a season, you can't really be starting like 0-7 or 1-8. I think that was to have a win like that. That was crazy, and it's going to stand out, and we're going to remember that game last night even 3 months from now. I think this team really needed that.
Torrey, after the game,
you're still trying to figure out what type of team you are, and anybody that's played sports at a high level, when you can go out and have these types of wins and make a statement, it's a push game and get you going for the next day. They're tough to come back from. We've had to from time to time, but these are those types of games you're looking for. And today's win told me a lot about this team. And I felt like I knew this team, but today made it a little more special. I think this team's ready to come out tomorrow and try to duplicate their effort.
I tend to believe one game is just one game, but it's kind of hard to ignore. They had a 5-4 lead in the 9th, a 6-5 lead in the 10th, a 7-6 lead in the 12th. They lost all three of those leads and still found a way to win.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something that can't just be, they can't just fall by the wayside and not have any significance. That's got to mean something. Maybe not everything, but it's got to mean something that they were able to do that.
Especially when you're as just naturally positive as Torrey Lovello is.
Yeah.
Like, now you have something positive to point to. And it wasn't, to me, it's not even just the letting the lead slip away and winning. It is a guy like Matt Peacock coming in and getting a hit and running the bases and pitching three innings in his first game, you know?
That was a lot of fun to watch. Sean Miller, officially out at the University of Arizona men's basketball program. Why did it take so long to come to this decision? And it seems like they might be getting burned for that. We'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.